Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden here on the third week of a Trump reign and all the excitement. And this is the Chuck and Julie Show, grassroots show, too straight up.
Yeah, brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. So much winning going on today. Just a couple of things. Number one, Trump ended the Biden ban on plastic straws.
Which,
Trump's
That's going to bother your daughter, though.
She just is opposed to straws in general, which, you know. And then also, I thought that we're going to have a guest here, but I just thought I'd bring this. I just saw the Department of HHS canceled today 62 contracts worth $182 million, all of them just administrative expenses, including the Fauci exhibit at the NIH museum. So
the Fauci exhibit? We love the Fauci exhibit. That's in Atlanta or something. It's a Fauci exhibit. My God.
We have Dr. Robert Marbot with us. Dr. Marbot is, he was a former homelessness czar under the first Trump administration.
And is a big fan of Dr. Fauci.
Yeah. And is a producer of a documentary, Fentanyl Death Incorporated. And he's here to kind of talk to us about Trump's tariffs and how they can help. So Dr. Marbot, thank you for your time. Welcome to the Chuck.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. You bet. So wanted to kind of, Chuck and I were talking about this the other day. And I like smoke pot, which is now legal in Colorado in high school, but I don't know, I'm not up on all of my drugs. What is the difference? And I know you've talked about this in your documentary and other things. Why is fentanyl so much more, correct me if I'm wrong, but dangerous than pot?
And how is it?
Or crack or cocaine?
And there's two or three questions altogether. And how is it administered? And is this cut into the poppy field production and the intravenous drug use of heroin?
A lot of questions there.
You got like four or five questions there, so yeah. Let's start unwrapping those or untangling them. Sure. First off, fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. It has the same effects that organic opioid has at a clinical level, at a biochemistry biology level, except for one very important thing. It's 100 times more powerful than morphine. Or traditional organic opioids. And I didn't mean 100 basis points. I don't mean 100 things. I mean 100 times. So it's 10,000% more powerful than morphine on a weight basis. To give you an idea of how potent it is, that one grain of rice will kill 15 people, an equivalent of fentanyl of one grain of rice, or two or three salt dust crystals. You know, if you were to look at a salt coming out of your shaker, that would kill one person. So that's what it is. How you get it, you can digest it, you can shoot it up, you can eat a pill. Right now, what mostly you see on the street is you take a pill and you heat it underneath. So you put a pill on a piece of foil, you heat it underneath it, and then you use a straw to ingest the inhalant. So it's not quite like a crack pipe where you're smoking it, but you're heating it up on a foil, and then you're breathing in the fumes from it on foil. In terms of your last question, to give you a perspective on, this is not weed, this is not K2, this is not even spice, it's not even coke and crack. To give you an idea, more people have died in the last 4.5 years of fentanyl than all American, all seven branches of military service, uniform service, plus intelligence agencies for the last 100 years of war. So if you go World War II, Korea, Afghanistan, Vietnam, Global War on Terror, Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Kosovo, and a few other UN actions in there and Iraq, add all those up, more people in America have died of fentanyl in the last 4.5, 5 years than all the wars combined the last 100 years.
What's it done to the heroin, organic heroin trade?
It's almost killed the we even have in our Fentanyl Death Incorporated documentary, we actually have a person who was a former addict in San Francisco talking about how fast fentanyl replaced the organic opioids. Okay. And you almost don't see any organic opioids left. There's a few cities that still have it out there. But for the most part, fentanyl has replaced it. It's cheaper to make. It's easier to transport. You can't smell it. You can't taste it. So it's so microscopic at a potency level, you almost can't see it. If you want to hide it, you can do it in a way that you can't see it. And so it has really killed all your other opioid markets. There's some still in the pipeline, but the... Think about how an opioid was made up in Afghanistan or in India. If you would have to go out, take the poppy, you know, cut the pod, let the juice come out, then you'd have to, so it had a very limited season, then you'd have to like cook it and bake it and then dust it and then all this other stuff. Whereas a pure synthetic opioid, you can make any time of the year, anywhere you want, if you got the right ingredients.
Let me ask you, so when we see the pictures of the fentanyl pills, so clearly that's cut with other stuff. That's not just like cocaine. It wasn't just the raw cocaine, right? It was cut with other stuff. What do they cut it with? Or is that one of the dangers, too, that they then can combine it with all kinds of other drugs, too, right? So if you have, you know, you can have fentanyl-laced pot or fentanyl-laced whatever.
Again, you keep going right at the big issues here. You get 3 or 4 things in there. When you see a fentanyl pill and a synthetic opioid fentanyl pill, most of that you see when you see a tablet that you'll see, you know, on the DEA site and such like that has some bonding agents with it that bonds it together to make it, you know, compress into a pill. Sometimes you have a coating on it. It could be a sugar or a waxy coating on it. You have other non-active ingredients that create the mass, and because you want to be able to have it hold together when you put it into the pill press. Now, you also have fentanyl powder, which is often blue, not always, but that's much more of a pure form. That's powder form that doesn't have, it has a color agent that comes out with it, but it's not really cut. Now, what happens in some parts of the country, like Philadelphia, is the epicenter of what's called trank on the street. Okay. And it's 30% horse tranquilizer, 70% fentanyl. So you're taking the most powerful synthetic opioid ever, and you're mixing it with the horse tranquilizer, which is designed to work on a animal that's 7-8 times heavier than you are by weight. So you're putting a horse tranquilizer with the fentanyl, and that's called trank on the street. And that's purposely laced. They sell it that way. And it's supposed to make the high go longer and reduce the chance of death. So that's marketed that way. But then there's the sort of lacing poisoning. And so that's when a fentanyl dealer or production makes, say that on Thursday night, they make a bunch of fentanyl, and then the next day they come in and they're doing weed or meth, or they're doing K2 spice, and they're using the same surface. Remember, fentanyl dust, a couple of grains of fentanyl dust will kill anybody. And so these are not white glove pharmaceutical labs.
FDA approved,
Yeah, these are back alleys. So they don't sterilize or clean the tabletop. So if you're doing fentanyl tonight and then tomorrow we're doing K2 and spice, you're going to pick it up. And DEA is fascinated. They have found that about 70% of other illicit drugs have some trace form of fentanyl in it now.
At least when you talk about the trank, and then I have wanted to get into the business model here and the tariffs, but just to kind of clarify something that I've seen in Denver a lot, in downtown Denver, you see the people where they're kind of like bent half over, right? They're just kind of like, and they're not necessarily falling, or they're standing there. They're kind of weaving back and forth, but they're kind of bent half over. Is that that trank?
Is that our local representative? Or is
yeah,
that,
yeah,
is
I know,
that,
really.
no.
Is that what trank?
That's what you're seeing there is what's called the fentanyl bend, like, you know, bending over. And it's the fentanyl bend. And what fentanyl does is, and I'm going to be very, you know, I'm going to be very oversimplifying here, but it paralyzes your chest cavity. And so it paralyzes your lungs so they can't breathe, they don't process. And it paralyzes your heart, and so it doesn't pump. So you have no blood pumping and no breathing going on. And or for the people who are still standing up and not have fallen over, that they are almost in a trance. They have a very faint blood flow. They have a little shallow breathing, but that's what it is. It's paralyzing you, and you just bend over, and then it's amazing. You'll see people like rocking a little bit,
right?
And that's keeping them standing, and then at some point they literally fall, and
right.
They just collapse and go to the ground. That's when now you have no breathing, no heart rate. But if you have shallow breathing, very faint heart rate going. That's why you know that's fentanyl, by the way, because that doesn't happen with meth. Meth is actually an upper, in essence.
Right.
If you're running around acting crazy, yelling, screaming, that's meth. Fentanyl is the opposite. Fentanyl just paralyzes you and puts you into a trance or a zombie-like condition.
What is that? Let's talk about the business model, because here's a question, and then because this will get into why the tariffs work. So if I'm like a cartel member, it seems to me that the better business model would be to like make it in the United States and then just distribute it rather than make it in Canada and have to import it. Why don't they just make it here?
The model has changed so fast. Basically, three different phases of the fentanyl crisis in just 14 or 15 years. So let's back up a little bit and then go forward. People got predominantly addicted to synthetic opioids through the Purdue Pharma crisis. And I know everybody's talked about that. There's a lot written about it. But Purdue Pharma and Edel, and it was far more than Purdue Pharma. It was the pharmacies, other drug manufacturers and such. But they were giving out millions of prescriptions, hundreds of thousands of people addicted. And then suddenly, remember what they said, by going from organic opioids to synthetic, it wasn't going to be as addictive and all that. Well, it turned out that was all wrong and a bunch of lies. It turns out it was actually more addictive and cheaper and faster to make. And so you had all these people addicted, all these people searching for prescriptions, when suddenly all the lawsuits shut it down, doctors stopped prescribing it, pharmacies stopped giving it out, hospitals started going. That was just only about 14, 13, 15 years ago. And so the cartels already had illicit drug distribution lines and networks in America. They already knew how to take drugs across the border. And they're an insidious group of people. They're just horrible people. But you know what? They're entrepreneurs. They're good business people. And they said, we got hundreds of thousands of people addicted, millions of people who want this on the street. We have a built-in market. We don't even have to market it. We're just going to backfill what was done. So China, at that point, was producing the pill, and the cartels were the distributor. They didn't make it in the first phase. And they backfilled the Purdue Pharma Edel prescriptions, and that was phase one. Then phase two became Mexican cartel said, this is really bulky getting it from China over. Why don't you just send over the precursors, or now pre-precursors, send over the active ingredients. We'll mix it with the other ingredients, which, by the way, you can get on Amazon. You can get, you know, it's amazing how most of this stuff you can get pretty easily. But mix it with the two or three really key active ingredients that's only really coming from China and India. bring it, and then now that then it gets made by the Mexican cartels and then brought up. And so that way you weren't moving bulk across from China to Mexico. You're just bringing the smaller active ingredients. Then they started making it in northern Mexico. Now, what you're seeing, the biker gangs up in Canada have gotten into it. They said, hey, we got a bigger, longer border with the United States. A lot of people forget Canada and the United States have the longest linear border between any two countries in the world. And it's
Wow.
not just, Maine to Blaine. It's also the Canadian Western frontier with Alaska. And so the bikers started saying, we can replace the cartels. So the biker gangs got involved. And remember now, fentanyl, 1 kilo of fentanyl, a quart of milk basically, can kill a 500,000 people. The dosing and the power and potency is so powerful that now you can put 2 kilos in biker leather saddlebags and move a massive amount of raw fentanyl across the border just in bikes now. And
Wow.
so now you got the biker gangs up in Canada doing it. And what I predict is President Trump is going to do a fabulous job of cutting down the China stuff. He's going to do a fabulous job of closing down, of making the borders less porous. Right now they're so porous. He's going to do a good job there. Then we need to be ready for the next phase, which is going to be a gang down the street from you making it down the street. Because we're going to shut the borders are going to get tightened here. And they're going to be very successful at that. And we need to be ready for what that next phase looks like.
Well, it sounds like you could get that through in any port of entry. I mean, Los Angeles. I mean, it seems to me such a small amount that is required to produce so much fentanyl would be so easily hid in a crate or anything else. I mean, once you shut down the borders, it's still easy to at that level where it's so small and so potent. You could bring in a thousand. You could bring it on an airplane. You could bring it
Or how,
anywhere. No
how would it do
smell.
its
No.
work?
Yeah.
Yeah, to
Because of all the ingredients, a lot of the ingredients you can go buy at Walmart or your local grocery store, a lot of the ingredients. And I don't mean the active ingredients, but the other part that gets in the mix. And so the active ingredient is so small. And that's what makes it very, very hard to interdict. And it's not just small, you can't taste it, you can't smell it. It's hard for dogs to pick up, unlike the organic
Right.
opioids are easy for dogs to pick up. Synthetic is much harder. And so you not only need to have a very closed border, you have to need all your port of entries, which is international flight, your we always remember how cocaine got into America, and that was through swift boats and speed boats coming up on the east side of Cuba and in the sort of marshlands from Miami all the way up into the Carolinas and going in and taking swift boats into those areas. And so all the waterways are part of this. So you got the Gulf, you got the Pacific, you got the Atlantic, you got Canada, you got Mexico. And then if you get all that closed down, think about what happens if you just get into a flight into Hawaii, Puerto Rico or Alaska. Now you're not checked as much. You're still checked a little bit, but not really. And that's why when if you're inside of an internal system, like say Canada has become the number one exporter of fentanyl to New Zealand and Australia because they're all part of the United Kingdom, and so they get checked less. That's why Canada is literally the number one distributor in Australia and New
Wow.
Zealand. What
Let me.
is the active ingredient that you have to bring in?
There are two or three, and what's happened, and this is a really interesting deal. They used to be like one precursor, and it's a very long, technical chemistry term.
Molecule kind of thing,
And
yeah.
what happens is they've changed it now. So as soon as we put that on the ban list, then they change it and
Right.
put it on a ban list. And we talked about that. We actually show the molecules make up, and you can see how in our documentary, we actually go through the three or four different changes But the active part, the claw that grabs on to the real active ingredient, keeps changing it. And so, as soon as you outlaw another precursor or now pre-precursor, then all you got to do is find another active ingredient that has that sort of, it's going to get over technical here, but a free radical and breaks off and attaches. And so we're always going to be on a fight, cat and mouse, of what
Right.
precursors are.
Well, it seems that as if, we have some very fine biker gangs right here in the United States. It seems that even if we cut off the whole, everybody else, we'll start making it here.
Well, that's what, yeah, that's what he was saying.
And that's what I was about ready to say. We also, so in the movie, we talk about the need to get tough on China and Canada and Mexico, and we need to recriminalize drugs in our own country by statute and by prosecution. But the fifth thing we talk about is a solution. And I know this doesn't always get as much media as the other, because the other's more, dynamic or visual or exciting. But think about this. United States makes up a population of about 4.25% of the world's population. But pretty much every illicit drug from PCP to angel dust to coke, crack, black tar, heroin, the organics, the synthetics, the meth, K2 spice, anything you've seen in the last 40 years, the United States generally consumes 30 to 40% of all the illicit drug by category. Right now, we're consuming, it's the ballpark, 38%, 36% of the worldwide fentanyl supply. Yet we're only 4.25%
Wow.
of the world's population. And so we need to have an honest conversation in America about what do we got to do to reduce our own consumption rate, because the moment you take out one cartel, another cartel pops out.
Right.
The moment you take down Mexico, it's going to move to Canada. When we close down Canada and Mexico, then it's going to go to the water. When we get that closed down, then it's going to be our gang down the street producing this. They're
Right.
going to say, hey, this is a great way to get an economic, it worked for the cartels, worked for China, worked for Canada, biker gangs. Now we can make our gang become a major distributor in the Midwest or something.
Right.
So we got to do all that interdiction. We got to get tough with Mexico, Canada, China. We got to do all that. But we also have to stop consuming so much illicit drugs in America if we really want to be successful at this.
Well, aren't we doing a pretty good job by killing off 100,000 or so users, some of which are first time, but a lot of them, I'm sure, long time drug users. We're killing off the market, aren't we? I mean, the heroin doesn't kill you so quick, so it'd be more valuable. Your customers are going to last.
And originally the model, the business model was what's called a margin model. So it was like $30, $40 a pill, even though the pill you could make for about 25 cents. So it was a margin game. Then when competition came in, especially when Canada gets in, starts competing against Mexico, it became a volume business. Now what they're struggling to do, and this is why things like Trank comes along, they're trying to figure out how do you keep the active engagement, the active high, if you will, that the euphoric high that fentanyl gives you, how do you do it without killing people off? And the problem is fentanyl is so potent, it's so powerful. Remember, a gas form of fentanyl is what the Russian
Yeah.
Officers used to go into that theater. Remember when they gassed, the theater got taken over and they gassed
Oh,
the theater and they
yeah.
had the big shootout. There were about 200 and some odd people who died, not counting the bad guys. But most of the people who died were not from gun wounds. Most were died because of the gas that went in,
Huh.
and it was so powerful, they tried the reversal agents and they weren't working. And so that's a struggle for the drug dealers, is they're trying to figure out how do we get that euphoric high but not kill people, because it's not good business to keep killing 125,000. And I think that number, by the way, is way underestimated for a variety of some of it's political. Local doesn't want to say it's fentanyl, so they put it in another category.
COVID. It's COVID.
Yeah, it's COVID.
Yeah, and here's a sad, of all the things that we did in prepping for the movie, and I went to China for 3 weeks. We've traveled, our teams traveled into Mexico, Canada. I have, other people on our team did, is the fastest growing cause of death for children 0 to 4 is fentanyl. And that's, they're not addicts. They're not going to drug dealers. They're just getting fentanyl poisoning in parks, foil that's left over after the consumption. If you put a sandwich on top of it, or wrap your sandwich with it, touch it, whatever, that's accidental death. The restaurant counters have had it. Sadly, older brothers, uncles, nephews, somebody else has it in the house.
You can imagine dollar bills or $20 bills, things like that too. I mean,
yeah, I'm of the age that I remember when almost every $100 bill in circulation had some sort of cocaine trace on it.
Right, right.
So, you know, now you've got it with, you know, fentanyl foils, straws, wrappers. And then to make it even worse, that there's still some fentanyl pills out there that were put, and the DEA has a pretty good picture on their site, last time I checked, of these colorful pills that look like skillets almost.
Right.
And they're colorful, really looking. And so children are used to, oh, well, that's a candy. And so they get into these colors and they don't realize it's there. And so these are the most innocent of anybody. I mean, you know, we have two moms that talk about it in our documentary. And it is just breaks your heart, because that's just downright poisoning. You know, that's not addiction. Right. That's not a user. That's not a drug dealer. That's not a wholesaler. And the other group I feel really sorry for are the people who get really sick, and some have died, or first responders who show up. They're doing their best to save somebody's life who they don't even know about. And they come and get contaminated by it.
Mm. Right. Well, it seems to me, for years I was a TV reporter and did a lot of stories about drugs and drug raids. And I know I used to have arguments with people who would say, well, it's a victimless crime. And, you know, I'd be with these cops, and this was back when it was like cocaine and crack and stuff. And you'd see these homes where there were little kids in there and the parents were addicted and they were, I mean, it's not a victimless crime. And it seems to me like here in Colorado, right, where we legalized marijuana, they portrayed us, oh, it's healthy, right? And the same thing, like you said, people started on like, you know, it's like the pills. It's like, well, I have my back hurts, so this is good for me kind of thing. It seems to me that part of it also just has to be like seriously cracking down on the people who make this, right? I mean, you got to make it, it's never, I think, going to go away, but you can make it more of a risk for them. And I don't know, do you think that would make an impact? Or
oh,
are we
totally. We have to recriminalize high-end and high-volume wholesalers. We need to recriminalize distribution, where your drug dealer down the street takes it, and if somebody dies from your drug, we should treat that like a murder, in my mind.
Yes.
And just period, full stop, no exceptions. We should absolutely treat it as, you know, to me, whether you get killed by a stabbing or cyanide poisoning or fentanyl poisoning, it doesn't matter. You still helped kill that person, and you should be treated that. And it's something that totally got missed during the last election, because everything was about the president election. California, Washington State, Oregon in particular, were been legalizing and decriminalizing drug high distribution, high quantity, the super dangerous stuff. The California legislature was probably the worst of anybody. They were just legalizing everything, decriminalizing it. And this doesn't count when you occasionally did meet a threshold and a prosecutor wouldn't prosecute. This is just pure statutory decriminalization. the citizens of California in a referendum voted 2-1 to overrule their legislature and start recriminalizing drugs. This happened in California, liberal blue voters that said, we've had it. And you're starting to see a lot of Democrat mayors around the country becoming law and order again and are saying, we can't, that we're going to prosecute. We're going to go after the bad people. And I'm with you. I have to push back on this victimless crime. If you go and really spend time with domestic violence, it's almost always drugs and alcohol that's a triggering event. And it's almost always on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night when people are out partying and doing drugs. What is the number one driver of property crime in our neighborhood? It is to get money to buy drugs. Yeah. What is it about robbery? Same thing. What is it about DUI? Is DUI now, it used to be alcohol. It's now all these other drugs coming in. And so this idea that this is a victimless crime couldn't be further from the truth, but it's that far left wokey group right. that's, trying to perpetuate this false narrative. And the fact that Democrats are starting to come across the line and saying, well, that experiment didn't work. We gotta get serious about it. I've seen more movement from the left. I mean, the right's always been good on this. In the middle, got good on this about 3 years ago. But I've seen more movement coming from Democrats and the left on this saying, this is crazy. In this idea that places like San Francisco that created safe consumption sites subsidized by taxpayers.
We got those.
Yep.
Like $28 million, they funded a place where you could go do fentanyl. And we show it in the movie I did on the documentary, Americans with No Address. We actually went down and filmed the place. $28 million paid for by the mental health, behavioral health, and HHS department of San Francisco and county. They have a combined government. And I was like, why are you making it easy to get high when we should be paying treatment services, recovery? And the one mantra I follow, that's all the policy I try to push around the country. Right now in America, we've made it so easy to get high and so hard to get treatment. We need to flip it on the head and make it easy to get treatment and hard to get high.
Well, Robert Kennedy, when he was testifying, he'd been a heroin addict from age 14 to 29. Said it helped a lot with his schooling, which is weird. But can he be a fentanyl addict for 15 years?
Absolutely can't. You'll die. I have yet to meet a person on the street who, when they started fentanyl to when I'm talking to them, is past 18 months. I've found three or four people like at 14 months, 13 months, most are 9 months or less, and you just die. You either die because you take too big of a dose and that you can't regulate something this microscopic. You don't have the laboratory capabilities of something this potent to do 1 grain of salt versus 2 grains of salt. It's just too hard to do. And so, and then even if you can get the diluted down version, or you assume everything you have is powerful, so you dilute it yourself, and then you get this reversal agent called Narcan on the street, and there's this myth out there that Narcan's going to solve this crisis. It's a tool, a very important tool in this effort, but it is not going to solve it. If a person goes for 2 or 3 minutes without breathing and their lungs aren't moving and their heart rate's not pushing the blood, you become brain dead. That's why when a person has a stroke or a heart attack, the number one thing we almost can always reverse the heart and the lungs through all sorts of resuscitation and shock and all. But what we worry about is the brain damage that's done. Right. And so you get a person, I've met some people on the street who have been reversed 30 to 40 times regularly. Whoa. I routinely find people and their brain is mush. I mean, they're alive, they're a walking zombie, but their brain is mush. And so this idea, if you get reversed by Narcan, if it happens to you once and you sort of like get religion and you realize I died, in a clinical definition, I wasn't breathing and my heart wasn't circulating blood. I've got a wake up moment. If it does that and you take the Narcan and you go get treatment, I'm happy for that path. But that we're creating a myth that Narcan reverses this. And all it is each time you get hit, you go 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 3 minutes
right.
without oxygen and circulation, you're becoming brain dead, one episode at a time. And then after 10 or 15, that's why you just don't see fentanyl addicts getting much longer than 14, 15,
wow.
16 months. And I have yet to meet anybody over 18 months who has been a fentanyl addict. You
well,
just don't live.
You've been, we've got to let you go. You've been amazing. We're talking, people asking, who is this? Who is this? This is Dr. Robert Marbot. And you have your movie, right? Fentanyl Death Incorporated. Where can people, I'm assuming it's all like, is it online? Where can people watch
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right now you can do it on a computer or your phone app on salemnow.com, like the city now. So salemnow.com, you can go watch it now if you want to be on a computer-based platform. Warner Brothers has picked up for distribution. We're going to do some limited theater release in March and April. And then May 6th is our set date for national streaming distribution. And so you can go watch it now like a sneak preview, or you can pick it up later for general distribution. And it's 1 hour. We got foreign service officers, intelligence officers, DEA, local police, local sheriffs, family. We have fentanyl like anesthesiologist experts. And so it was incredible how many people came around to help us out and be experts and lend their expertise in their areas.
All right, sir.
Well,
thank you.
That's fascinating. It's just absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much. And we have to have you back sometime.
And thank you so much for having me on. But more importantly, thank you for caring about the fentanyl crisis.
All right, sir. Thank you. Yes, we all need you. Thank you very much, Dr. Robert Marbot there. Enjoy your weekend, sir. Thank you. You know, which kind of leads me to the thing where he talks about, how little it is. We've been reading about and hearing about, all the ICE raids in Denver, right? The DEA/ICE raids. And they had the one we talked about where they arrested like 50 people in the warehouse in Adams County. And that, Channel 9 is making a big deal about the fact, well, all they had was personal use. Well, it seems to me that that much fentanyl could, I mean, it's like personal use. It's like
that
would be
huh?
a grain of salt, right? So it seems like ridiculous. And that kind of leads into the next thing. It's like, we need to, as he said, it's like, you need to deal with this. And, that's what one of they're trying to do with some of these raids. They're getting rid of these criminal, illegal alien gangs because this is what they do, right? They sell drugs, and they sell drugs here in the United States. And Channel 9 may try to tell us it's a figment of our imagination, but it's not. But
Kyle Clark will tell us.
But one of the most outrageous things is that they found out, and we'll play a soundbite here, that so we've had these protesters show up. Why would you want to protest taking a criminal, illegal, alien gang member off the streets? Why would you want to protest that?
It's a part of the Democratic Party.
Well, exactly.
Future voters of America.
Because they're evil. Exactly. And they're showing up, and they're not just protesting. They're showing up, and somehow or another, they're getting the word that the raid is coming. They're showing up. They're interfering with the officers. They're making it difficult and dangerous for the officers to do their job. And then they're leaking it, right? So the gang members leave. And Homan is basically saying, fool around and find out. If we could please play on the Tom Homan leaks soundbite, Thomas.
I have so many questions. First of all, if they're shouting and helping these people get away with bullhorns, how is that legal to get help from the people in the streets? I know they can protest, but that's not what they're doing.
You're exactly right. When they come to they cross the line of impediment. And that's why I'm working very close, starting this morning with Department of Justice, and where do they cross that line of impediment? So they may find themselves in a pair of handcuffs very soon. So working with DOJ on that, get some legal guidance on that. I'm not an attorney. I know what SecOps is about. I know what crossing that line is, but getting DOJ back up on that. So it's something we're looking at mm-hmm. right now, Harris. We're not going to tolerate it anymore. This is not a game. When we show up these sites, this is a dangerous job for the men and women of ICE and Border Patrol and all the DOJ agencies. To have that type of interference puts our officers at great risk. Not only the officers, it puts the aliens at great risk because anything can happen when we take our eyes off the goal here. So we're addressing that immediately today. I'm addressing OPSEC today. Operation Security, how these leaks are happening. We've already identified how this operation got leaked. I'll deal with that today.
So, I mean, and he's right. It's not a game. And again, you go back to what is, well, I know what's wrong with them, but it's like they are so caught up in the immigration thing and trying to repopulate the United States, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and take back over the elections the only way they can. But they don't care how many people like literally get hurt in the meantime, right? And they'd rather let the criminal, illegal alien gang member go to continue producing this stuff, because they, Marbert's absolutely right. Once they close down the borders, then they'll just start making it here.
Doesn't seem like it's going to be stopped by.
No, I mean, well, it takes an octopus, right? It takes an off run, but people deliberately alerting the bad guys, I mean, you know what I mean, to go. It's like, why would you even do that? But that's just me.
It's
just me. Want to talk about another thing too? Okay, so start off. The Biden ban on plastic straws, gone, right?
Gone.
Health and Human Services, as I said, cut $182 million in administrative expenses, including the Anthony Fauci exhibit that was planned at the NIH Museum.
Oh,
no more Dr. Fauci exhibit.
They get rid of the whole NIH museum.
That's right. And the other thing he did is he signed, surrounded by a ton of girls, from little girls up to college
big
age girls, banned boys playing in girls' sports, right?
Federally.
But I think they won't give dollars and stuff like that. And then the NCAA, I think, was glad to have this because they're like, okay, we want.
That's a sick organization. That's a criminal enterprise in itself.
But they said they would ban it. They weren't going to allow it. I think that was they were happy to get out of it. And it's interesting because just like defending criminal illegal aliens, that's a bad brand for the Democrats to choose. This whole boys and girls sports and this nonsense, this complete transgender thing taking over the world, also not a good brand. And Nancy Mace, you were the one who found this soundbite. This is great. I don't know if you heard this, where Nancy, this is at some hearing, and Nancy Mace kind of jumps in. Thomas, if we could play the Nancy Mace soundbite.
The gentlelady has used a phrase that is considered a slur in the LGBTQ community and the transgender community. And let me please finish without interruption.
And tranny, tranny, tranny. I don't really care. You want penises in women's bathrooms, and I'm not going to have it.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Let the gentleman state his parliamentary inquiry.
It's
fine. Gentlelady.
Barney, Leah, what about Dr. Fauci? Can he play in women's sports? No, I don't know. I've been from Charlene. Yes. Didn't someone tip off the Aurora raid? Yes. Apparently, and Holman indicated there that he knew who that was and he was going to deal with it.
Mike Johnson, the mayor.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the interesting thing is CNN did a poll. And again, this is just a bad the Democrats, I hope they don't, but they need to get a new PR agency or something like that's defend criminal illegal aliens and that's defend boys playing in girls' sports. It's not working.
And cut down anybody saying the T word.
That's right. You can't say tranny.
As well, I found out we had Ted Tripp on and I said something about tranny, you know. No, you can't use that word.
They make up a word that you can't say. Yeah. No one cares anymore. That's the thing. That's why when Nancy Mace goes, tranny, tranny, tranny. That's what's happened. But if we, Thomas, could this please play the CNN poll? This is interesting.
I think these numbers are really illuminating on this topic because I just think there's such a clear trend among the American public. So transgender female athletes in women's sports, only 18% of the country says that they should be, in fact, allowed to participate in women's sports. Compare this to the opposition. I mean, my goodness gracious, 79%. You rarely get 79% of the country to agree on anything, but they do, in fact, agree on the idea of opposing transgender female athletes in women's sports. But it's not just the here and now, Laura. It's not just the here and now. What we're actually seeing is a trend on this particular issue, and it's going in the direction of opposition. So take a look here. Okay, transgendered female athletes, and amongst those Americans who oppose them in women's sports, back in 2021, it was 62%, a majority, but, you know, not anywhere close to a ginormous majority, right? A clear majority, but not a ginormous majority. But then again, you look here in 2025, you see it at 79%. So it's not just that the majority of Americans are opposed to transgender female athletes in women's sports. It's that the opposition has become considerably larger in just the last 4 years.
You know, and it's because they go too far. You know, you look at some other things, and we could spend shows talking about the cuts in U.S. aid and the outrageous bombshell information about all the media organizations, Politico, New York Times, Associated Press, Reuters, that were getting paid by U.S. aid, right? No wonder they were burying
Well, I
all
could
of that
talk about
stuff.
that for, 30 seconds because we don't
Sure.
have much time, but you have to realize I enjoy watching Rachel Maddow on MSNBC because I like to see what the other side is saying and doing and everything else, and other outlets. There's nothing on all the grift. There's nothing. It's just the mean Republicans don't want to give the poor kids a meal. And the poor people dying of HIV. I mean, they don't. That's 100%. You can ask somebody, and people like Jane Fonda, who only the New York Times, MSNBC. They wouldn't have no idea what you're talking about if you said, "So what about the grift for this? What about, no, they're closing down aid to important people."
Fortunately, only like five people, and you're one of them, watch MSNBC anymore.
Well,
But what's interesting, though, is again watching the Trump administration push back. So this just came out. So there was, so you know, Elon Musk has his whole group of people who make up Doge, and they're sort of the researchers, right? So this woman, as it turns out, for the Washington Post, just started working there, but she's worked at all these other agencies that were funded by USAID.
right.
Right, so she's clearly a government plant, right? And her thing is doxing people. So she gets information and doxes one of Elon Musk's kids, and I get what he's like 19, who was posting apparently inappropriate stuff. I mean, I don't really know what it, but just sort of racially inappropriate stuff. But his name was Big Balls, right? And so she doxed him, and initially they fired him, and then J.D. Vance started posting on X saying, "Why are we firing this kid? This is America. We give people a second chance. Just because some stupid journalist was paid to dox him, why are we letting them tell us who we can or can't hire?" So I think he's getting rehired. So you just gotta
That's
love
great.
the
That's
Trump
great.
administration
That's
pushing
great.
back, right? And Elon Musk is like, so and you know, and he's kind of posting, "Oh, look, who here's who else they dox. Doxing days are over. No one cares, right? No one cares." And sort of this is my final Friday funny soundbite, and this is a quick one,
Funny
but
one.
Is it okay? Yeah, this we can wrap it up. This is kind of all ties in. You know, Time Magazine, I guess, put a picture of Elon Musk. What the left is doing is they're trying to pretend that like Elon Musk is running the country. Like somehow it's okay when George Soros is doing it, but if it's Elon Musk,
That's bad.
then it's bad, right? So they keep saying the billionaire is telling everyone what to do. And so Time Magazine, in a swipe at Trump, apparently put a picture of Elon Musk like sitting behind the presidential desk, I
The
guess,
Resolute Desk.
right, implying that he's in charge. So some stupid reporter who doesn't yet get that Trump doesn't care tries to get Trump in a gotcha moment over this all, and his response is hilarious. So Thomas, if we could please play the Trump soundbite.
Mr. President, do you have a reaction to the new Time magazine cover that has Elon Musk sitting behind your Resolute desk? Time
No.
magazine, Elon Musk.
And so this is a Japanese translator because this is a meeting with the Japanese Prime Minister.
Is Time magazine still in business? I didn't even know that.
It's like Time magazine. Are they around still? It's like, who cares? And that's a perfect point. No one cares. No one cares that this poor, not poor, but this stupid journalist who's not a journalist, who's moved around from one government secretly funded position to
Right
another,
to the Washington
just
Post.
goes right to the Washington Post,
They're gonna
where
get him. They're gonna dox these kids. They'll be sorry.
they'll be
They're gonna
sorry.
find some girlfriend who said, "He insulted me."
And then his name was Big Balls.
You can't have anybody
So the
dox
memes
me, big
just write
balls.
themselves. Here's the thing, the other problem the left has is anymore, Republicans are funny. You know what I mean? Democrats are mean. And have you seen the video? And I didn't have time to pull it, where Maxine Waters and all these Democrats go to the Department of Education and they demand to go in. And they're like being self-important and self-aggrandizing. And there's the Doge security guy. He's kind of got a little band-aid on his neck and he's just standing there. And Maxine Waters is kind of going on and on. And she's kind of starting to poke him. And he kind of rolls his eyes. And he doesn't really say anything. He's like, "No, you can't go in." there. And she's like, whoa, oh,
we're Congress.
And it's, they just look stupid, right? He's just like, well, I guess they didn't want to rush him. It's just this one.
Well, they should have. They could have been like the Mexicans at the border, you know, that thing where you have hundreds of them rush them and throw them to the side. Yeah.
To do once they get there, it's like
I don't know, transport.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do a J6 on it.
It's just so funny. He's just kind of standing there, and he just kind of rolls his eyes like, you know.
You're not getting by.
You're not getting by. He doesn't cave into their thoughts, you know, into their pressure. You know, the cancel culture has been canceled, I think, and it's a glorious thing.
Glorious thing.
Hey, so that's going to do it for us today. Thank you to everybody on Zoom. Your comments here have been great. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you to the doctor. I thought he was very educational. Very educational.
He was really good. And that's it. It's time for Party Friday.
All right. Everybody get out there and go to your local fentanyl dealer.
No.
No, don't do that. If anything, should after listening to that, you go, I don't think I'll try that.
I don't think that's a healthy choice. Yeah. We'll see you all on Monday, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.